Well, it's great to be with you this morning, and it's a pleasure to be back at St. Stephen. So I used to come here what feels like many moons ago, but I'm sure it wasn't even that long ago. My real name is Andrew McClay, but people call me Macca, partly because I think when I first started going to church, there was about 100 Andrews, so they just went with Macca, and in fact, there was actually about 5 Maccas. I think I was Macca 3, but I was never actually referenced as Macca 3, so... and that name has stuck over the years. And so I am the Ealing Church's worker with the homeless for the Ealing Soup Kitchen. I don't know if any of you have heard of the Ealing Soup Kitchen. I know your church supports it, and you guys have been on team for a very long time. And there's many who I recognize who have come down and volunteered. And if you haven't volunteered for the Soup Kitchen or you haven't done it, I do recommend you do come and see it because it's wonderful work. I know I'm biased saying that, but I would be remiss if I didn't. Right, so now that I've introduced myself, I thought I'd start with my talk. Who has seen Mr. Bean? Everybody, pretty much. Everybody knows Mr. Bean, right? It's kind of a classic. I was watching Mr. Bean last night, which is a bizarre thing for me to watch, but it was on TV. And it was an episode where Mr. Bean had bought a TV for his little flat, one of these kind of big TVs, you know, round ones. And it had an antenna that came with it. And he puts it down on the desk, and in typical sort of Mr. Bean style, he's trying to find a plug for it. And it's very sort of animated because he doesn't speak. Everything is kind of very observational. And it sort of makes you laugh because you're sort of thinking to yourself, I can exactly see myself doing this years and years ago. Nowadays, I think we have a completely different setup for our TVs, but he had this antenna, right? And, you know, I don't know if it still works this way. It doesn't in my house, but certainly with, I remember as a kid having an aerial where I'd have to move it about in order to get reception. Does everyone remember that? Yeah, so he had this little sort of antenna like this size with a large cord, and he's sort of walking around the room trying to get some reception for it. And it's as he's doing it. And as he's sort of trying to find the right spot so that he can get some reception, he sort of does this, and then suddenly he hears kind of, and the news today is, and he's sort of like, and then he moves, and it's back to. So he's sort of, oh, what do I do? So he gets his chair, and he puts it here, and the TV's facing, you know, basically the way the lectern is, so he can't really see it from here. But he's sort of thinking, how am I going to get this reception? So you can see him sort of craftfully moving along. And as he's sitting there, he thinks, well, what if I put something onto the chair? So he starts removing his chair and starts removing his shoes and puts the shoes onto the chair in order to try and get the reception. And, you know, he spends like 20 minutes doing this just to try and get some reception. And even to the point where he's actually planking onto the chair so that he can kind of see a little bit of reception. But nothing works because the second that he does that, it goes back to the... And in some ways, it's funny. It is really funny, but it's a situation I'm pretty sure most of us have been in, where, you know, you spend a long time doing something, and it's absolutely futile, no matter what you do. You can try for hours and hours, days, months, years, and sometimes things just don't work out. And it's kind of crazy. I was thinking about it. I've tried to set up things in my life to make them so that they are perfect. And I try and set it up so that everything is exactly right. But sometimes it's never the right time. Sometimes, no matter what I do, it's always going to be futile. And in some ways, I think this passage reinforces this. A disciple says to Jesus, I will follow you, but let me first go and bury my father. And there's some context to this because years ago, burying your father was, you know, if you didn't bury your father, that was quite a very disrespectful thing. And it was very, very important. And it talks a lot about the cost of following Jesus. But it also speaks about maybe this isn't the right time. Maybe for Mr. Bean, he was never going to get that TV reception. Maybe that was just not his thing. And maybe he needed to come back to it at another time. But has anyone ever felt like, you know, when you're trying to make space for God in your life, there's just not enough time? Am I the only one? No. Yeah, I mean, I find it incredibly difficult. I got married last year, and I found that being married means that I have half the time that I used to have. Partly because I'm a very selfish individual, and I haven't realized how selfish I was until I got married. Now I realize there's a whole bunch more things I need to do. You know, my wife does a billion times more things than I will ever do. But I just realized there's that, you've got to look after somebody else as well, and it's just less time. And time always seems to be something that I always feel like I'm up against it. You know, I'm always thinking, how can I get more time? And anyone, if you've ever emailed me in the capacity of emailing the Soup Kitchen on social media or via email, you will know it sometimes takes a while for me to get back to people because I, on top of all of the admin, I'm also at all of the drop-ins and trying to sort everything out at once. And sometimes it can be like juggling a whole bunch of books. And, you know, and I'm watching as some of them are falling, but there's nothing I can do about it because my hands are already full. And I feel like that is like us with our journey with God. There's too much stuff, and we let stuff get in the way of what's really important. I wanted to give you an example. For my job, I take quite a bit of photos. So I started out with my smartphone, and somebody donated a decent DSLR camera, and I've never used one, so I was Googling and YouTubing how to use this thing. And so I was taking lots and lots of photos. I've been doing it for probably 3 years now, trying to take some decent photos, and so many were blurry. Last weekend, I had my first wedding where I was asked to photograph this wedding. And if you've seen my photographs, you know that's probably not a good idea. I'm not a wedding photographer. I mainly take pictures of vulnerable and homeless and soup kitchens, so it's not really the best. But I took about 3,000 photos, something like that. Do you know how many came out well? About 50 or so. When I kind of edited them, it was about 50. But, you know, I had to go through like 2,500 photos. It spent hours and hours and hours trying to get everything perfect and just didn't work. So I didn't have that many photos to show. But at the same time, I also submitted a photo. I took a guy called Richard Ratcliffe, if any of you have heard of him. He did a hunger strike out in the Iranian embassy earlier this year because his wife, Nazanin, is imprisoned. And I went and took a photo of him on his 13th day, and it went crazy on social media. It got like 20,000 retweets, and I put it into a competition, and I won an award. So even though it took me 3 years or something to figure out how to use this camera, there is some benefits to it. And the point of that is that just because things don't work straight away doesn't mean that things won't work. And even though there is a massive cost in some ways to following Jesus, there is a cost. It costs us time. Sometimes that it costs us finances. You know, it costs us lots of different things. But in the end, there are rewards. So are we making time for Jesus? Because ultimately, it's probably never going to be the right time, to be honest. You know, it's probably never going to be the right time. We've always got something on our plate. We've always got someone to bury or washing up to do or friends to see or, you know, places to go, work to do, whatever the case may be. There's always something on our plate. So we can't just sort of think, oh, well, you know, a time will approach ourselves. We have to be proactive and actually seek Jesus. And one of the things when I first became a Christian, well, just before I became a Christian, actually, I was in youth group. And people used to talk to me about this Jesus guy. He was amazing. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. And I used to think that Jesus was like here, you know, behind me. And so if I turned around, Jesus was there. So I better be good because he's watching me. But actually, once I realized what Jesus was about, I actually realized that Jesus is here, right next to me. He's standing with me, walking with me. The photography that I do, I'm not a particularly, you know, I'm not super good at photography, but any gift or talent I have comes from him. He's the one that was helping me with that. He's the one that was kind of lifting me up. And so too with the work that I do at the soup kitchen. It's not about me, and it's not about the St. Stephen's team, or about the St. John's team, or about ECC, or any other church that is involved. It's actually about the work that Jesus does in us, you know, that directly corresponds and then actually works through the clients there. And we see in the passage that there are miracles. Jesus heals people. He fixes people who have fever. He drives away spirits and demons. And, you know, what is not to love? The language there is this kind of really, you know, a fever is one thing, but driving out demons, that just seems insane. It's like two different things on the spectrum, and he can do everything. And he's this God who sort of has power and dominion over everything. So that sounds pretty powerful, right? And yet, I still find myself distracted, and I still find myself lacking with time. I wanted to just tell you quickly a story about one of the guys that comes to our soup kitchen. There was a guy called Terry. Some of you might have met him. He is a guy who actually was a bit of a terror, if I'm being honest with you. Addicted to drugs. He would be the kind of person that would hold you up with a knife for money to get his drugs. You know, he was quite a unsociable and quite a hard person to deal with in the soup kitchen, quite demanding. Always felt that, you know, people owed him and that he was better than everybody else. A real chip on his shoulder. And last year he had quite a bad time of it, where he owed quite a significant sum of money, and to the point where he actually needed to go and get help. And where did he go? He went to the church. And the church's response was, "We'll help you." They didn't have to, but they did. They helped him. And he sort of reflected on that. And I remember having a conversation with him about it, saying, you know, you don't understand how bad this situation was for me. Like, I could have lost fingers. Like, this was the kind of situation that he's in. And I'm sure that none of us in this situation would realize how dire that is. But he lived a life that was pretty, pretty bad. You know, it was kind of very desperate and very in need of something in his life. And he ended up getting help from the church. And as a result, he asked, "Please, can I volunteer at the soup kitchen? I just want to do some good." And at first, there's this sort of trepidation. Well, you know, is he going to, you know, has he changed? Is he going to steal? You know, there's all these things in your head as humans that you think, oh, I'm not really that comfortable with that. But the thing about God is God just sees past all of that stuff. He doesn't care about, like, the little insecurities that we have. He just works in people irregardless. So Terry started volunteering. Even though I had trepidations, and even though I had fears, and even though most of my volunteers had fears. I mean, there was a big stage where he wasn't really allowed to go in, where all of the volunteers kept their jackets and stuff, because, oh, what if he goes back to his old habits? But after a while, we started seeing a different Terry. We started seeing a Terry who put others first. The Terry that I knew before, if he saw a chair that was occupied, he'd sit on it. He didn't care. If he saw food that wasn't being eaten, he would eat it. If he saw something that was of value, he would take it. And I started to see little things in him where he would put other people first. Like, as a volunteer, he was there to serve the food. But at first, when he would volunteer, as soon as the food came out, he would take the food and then sit down on the table himself and eat. And the whole point is, when you volunteer, you're serving throughout the whole time, you know, and then at the end, if there's any food left, then you can eat. And this was the Terry that I'd inherited. And then throughout the years of him volunteering, he started to change, and he started to sort of really wait on people. And he started washing up, doing all the stuff that nobody wanted to do. He started taking out the garbage and, like, really trying to allay people's fears and really trying to change his ways. And then he started befriending some of the volunteers. And through that, one of the volunteers got him a place to live, a new place to live, a new council flat. Then he started thinking to himself, you know, this is going really well. Maybe I'll give a job a shot. So he started applying for jobs, and he got a job as a painter and decorator. And it, like, this is a guy who wouldn't have been able to work for the last sort of 10 years or so because of his addictions that weighed him down. And it was just an incredible transformation to see somebody who had these real barriers, and, like, the biggest barriers that you could possibly get to learning about that freedom that you get with Jesus to being completely transformed. And, you know, we see it again and again in the Bible with disciples like Peter and Paul and people who have really had to do drastic changes in their lives. And it was amazing seeing this transformation there. And as I was reading this passage, and the reason I chose it is because I sometimes look at, you know, Jesus driving out demons and think, well, that doesn't really happen in my life, though. You know, okay, yeah, fevers, fine, fevers, you know, I could take paracetamol, thank you, Jesus. But driving out demons seems like a kind of an extreme thing, but honestly, I can tell you that in the soup kitchen, I see that. I do see that. It doesn't happen in some kind of spiritual way that seems sort of out of reach or out of touch, because often that's the terms that I think a lot of my friends and non-Christian friends live by. They're all like, oh, that's very spiritual. But they even see how amazing this stuff is, how transformative it is, how giving people a chance, how letting people come in and eat food and come to God on their own terms changes people's lives. So, you know, this following Jesus stuff, you know, it's a challenge. And it doesn't take, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. It takes years, just like me and taking photos. It doesn't, you know, it's not something that's like straight away all the time. Sometimes it is. There are other people who have come and volunteered with us who have had kind of lives that I will never understand. There's a lady who volunteers with us who went to jail in Peru for 4 years for smuggling crack, and now as a result speaks Catalan, and is born in this area, and, you know, completely transformed, sees her family, you know. I could spend the entire time up here telling you stories about people who have been completely changed and transformed by the work of the Ealing Soup Kitchen, but I don't want to do that. I want to talk about Jesus and how Jesus kind of changes the lives there, because I don't want it to be about the work that I do or the work that we do. I want to talk about the work that Jesus does through us, because I think that's the big crux for me. It's seeing that Jesus is actually working through these people. And that, to me, is just incredible. And, you know, the cost is that I think sometimes when you become a Christian, you feel a little bit isolated. Maybe I can't tell my friends about this. Maybe my friends won't understand, you know. That's, in a naive way, the very first tattoo I have here is of, it's I think, the first two letters of Christ. And I got that deliberately, not because I wanted to sort of show off that I had a tattoo, because this was years ago, but to remind myself of who I was. You know, that my worth isn't defined by the world, it's defined by God. And I needed a reminder of that, because I suffer from depression, I suffer from burnout, I've been homeless before. There's lots of things in this life that kind of drag you down, and if you let it, it can really overtake you. And I wanted Jesus, more of Jesus in my life. And as I've already explained to you, time is not something I'm particularly good at keeping, so I needed all the help I could get. And, you know, most of the people that come to the soup kitchen, a lot of them feel alone, you know. The soup kitchen's been running for 46 years now, and it's been a place where homeless and vulnerable people actually feel safe. And that is down to the work of Jesus. People say Jesus, you know, isn't around. You watch the news and you see all this depressing stuff, and we hear about Brexit, Brexit, Brexit all the time. And all this stuff that just makes you feel like, oh, it's hard to get up in the morning sometimes. And sometimes we need motivation. But miracles like the salt of the earth stuff, where you're seeing individuals who feel as though the world hates them and feel as though the world will never accept them, is an amazing privilege to behold. You know, I used to read about the disciples and see these people who were incredibly fallen, and I'd think, if I met them, I probably wouldn't like them very much. And I'd probably be thinking in my own judgmental head of all the things that they had done prior to becoming a Christian, because maybe that's just the way I'm wired. But I also realize that's what Jesus is about. It's about that transformation and that change. And so many of the guys in the soup kitchen do feel like an outsider, but they feel like The soup kitchen is a family to them. Like outside of the soup kitchen, they could be bullied or victimized, but in the soup kitchen, we're all family. And you see that when someone dies. When you see a death in the soup kitchen, there are dozens of people who would just crowd around that person and hug them. And it's a real sense of this passionate love. You know, this real kind of, I think I really struggled when I moved to Britain because a lot of people, British people, I mean, don't necessarily say what they mean deep down. So, you know, they might say, how are you? But they don't actually want to know how you are. They just say that because they're being polite. Are you all right? What if I'm not? Do you really care? And like, we probably don't. We have no time. And it's not that we don't have capacity. It's just that, you know, life is busy. And I think that sometimes it can be a little bit like that, where we get a little bit disenchanted by the world that we live in. And the clients particularly that I work with, because they're so vulnerable and they feel so alone, often feel like the only thing they have is faith. Faith that's going to get them into a place. Faith that's going to restore their relationships with their families. Faith that's going to turn them into better people. Faith that's going to transform not only their lives, but mine and the people who work at the soup kitchen. And that is amazing. That is where Jesus' miracles are still working today. You know, it might not be like as physical as seeing demons driven out, but it is there and it's working in these vulnerable group of people. And I think, do you know, the reason that I think a lot of them still rely on us is because they see the light in us. They see the examples that we set. And it's hard because as people we want to we want to be better, but we just don't have time. And sometimes we're struggling with lots of different things. I don't know about you. Maybe it's just me up here. I feel quite hot and it feels like it's a really warm day. But often I feel sort of like life just crushes in. But that's when I'm reminded that God is right next to me, not behind me. I don't need to look behind. I can look forward and walk with Jesus in his example. And I see Jesus in the clients. I see it when they love one another and when they do things for one another. And just a quick example I gave in the 9 o'clock service was there was a gentleman who had just been moved into a new flat. And he said to me, do you know what I really need is a microwave? Do you know what happened? I didn't even ask for one. Some guy just turned up at the soup kitchen with a microwave. How bizarre. Is that me or is that God? You know, just putting things on people's hearts. I mean, you might not think just donating a bit of clothes, donating something kind of random might actually do that to somebody, but that is how Jesus works. And as a result, he said to me, do you know what? My faith has increased. And as a result, he went and bought that team that was on that day. It had nothing to do with the team, but he bought that team brand new Ealing Soup Kitchen shirts out of his benefits. He doesn't have that much money, but he decided to write like ESK team, volunteer, how can we help you? And, like that would have cost him quite a bit of money because I know how much shirts cost because we get them done. And it's, you know, it's an expensive process, but he wanted to do that as a way of saying thank you, to give back after the kind of the faithfulness that he had seen there. And for many homeless, faith is an integral part of their survival. Without Jesus, many would have already perished. But the work Jesus does through us helps them get them back onto their feet. What an amazing gift. And as a result, a lot of them pray. And they prayed for me when I've been unwell. They prayed for me when I got married. They prayed for my wife and I when we went through IVF. And they continue to pray fervently for my mother-in-law who's been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. Every time I see them, how's your mother-in-law? How's your wife? All these things, you know, that you think, you look at people and you think, the way that someone behaved, like the way that maybe Terry might have behaved, you think, how could they possibly think about anyone but themselves? But in the soup kitchen, they become transformed people. And you know, the timing isn't always great. Sometimes we're not ready. Sometimes we're not ready, but God still uses us. It never is in this world. And it doesn't mean we can't make a little bit more time for God, who loves and understands and hears us. After all, if you can change a bunch of rough sleepers who have no hope into hopeful people who care about others and actually change other people's lives, then what can he do for us? How can he change our attitudes and our lives? And practically, maybe that means going to the Alpha course. Maybe that means finding out more about God. Maybe that means going and praying privately that prayer. Maybe you've never considered God before and you need to just go to a quiet place and pray, God, please hear me, heal me, heal me, hear me, understand me. Maybe it means asking somebody to pray for you, or just asking Steve or Sam, what's the next steps? What can I do to increase my faith? How can we pray together? And that's the great thing about church, is that church itself is a family. You know, the soup kitchen might be a family, but there's a big family here. And everybody here wants to just grow in their faith and get to know one another. And even though we're all very different individuals, we all have the same common purpose and goal,